called Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on this week's show, find out why Twitch is being sued for $2.8 billion, reflections from this past weekend's NBC Premier League Fan Fest, how Turner's Champions League TV ratings are doing compared to Fox, is number 30 too much for Major League Soccer on national TV? Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnire. Now, Kartik, this is going to be our Christmas episode or our holiday episode because we record this usually on a Wednesday or a Thursday. Well, next week it's going to be Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Lots of soccer to look forward to, but we're going to take a break next week, but we'll be back the following week around about New Year's Eve with a special guest. More details to come about that. But what about you, Kartik? So looking back at this past week, what was the one match that stood out for you that you enjoyed watching the most?
That I enjoyed watching the most? I would actually say it was probably the Charlton Hull match on Friday in the championship with a dramatic late equalizer for Hull. Great old-fashioned English football. Well, the ground was pretty empty, maybe election day after the election hangover. Those election returns, everything were coming late into the night. In fact, so late into the night, UK time, it was even late US time where I went to bed. It was clear that the Tories would have a parliamentary majority, but they didn't have it at that point. So maybe that affected the attendance. But that was a wonderful game, ESPN Plus, Friday afternoon. There are some really exciting games in the championship, and Route 1 football can still be exciting. I know it's not what football purists like, but this was just a knockdown, drag out type lower division English football affair. I quite enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of Everton and actually some of the analysis. I think it was NBC SN did probably last week or the week before about Duncan Ferguson style in terms of just the Route 1 football. You mean long ball from the back from the goalkeeper? You mean headed on back by one of the strikers? And in the net, it goes onto the striker who knocks it into the back of the net. I have a lot of I know you do too, Kartik. You have a lot of appreciation for Route 1 football because it does work. It is effective, and it can really break up teams in terms of playing styles or surprise them. Now, from this past week, in terms of what was my favorite match to watch, this past week for me has been very unusual. So I went to the NBC Premier League Fan Fest. This was the very first one I've ever been to. It was in Miami Beach. I was there Friday doing interviews with Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, and then I think Saturday with Kyle Martino. And I was there all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And so most of the matches I watched were on the giant screen televisions or the monitors at the Fan Fest, which I'll get to in a little bit. But in terms of the quality of football, it wasn't a very good Premier League weekend by any means. Most of the matches were lacking that technical ability to really have them shine, really. So for the match, for me, the one that was the most entertaining was Monterrey against Liverpool in the FIFA Club World Cup semi-final on Wednesday. And I was surprised at how competitive this was. Obviously, on the Tuesday night, it was Liverpool's U23 side playing in the League Cup against Aston Villa live on ESPN Plus in a squad for the Liverpool where there was not one recognisable name. The one name that that most people would recognise, probably Ryan Brewster, who won the England U17 World Cup. He was injured, so he didn't play. But the Liverpool game against Monterrey, very competitive, very high level, good football, lots of chances back and forth. You could tell that both sides were going for it. Monterrey put in a really good effort. Liverpool, of course, getting a late goal, as they normally do. And now they're advancing to this weekend's final. Other than that, so I watched El Clasico. This, to me, was probably one of the most boring, uneventful El Clasicos I've seen in years. No clear chances for either team. It was very defensive. No Antoine Griezmann kind of lighting up the stage in this one. In terms of the commentary and the production, it was, I mean, even the crowd at Camp Nou was mellow, very, very laid back, very quiet, even from the beginning of the game. Phil Shane and Thomas Rongen commentating this one. Thomas, I admire, but he is no Ray Hudson. I mean, Ray and Phil worked together so well. Phil and Thomas, it didn't click as it normally does. And then beIN Sports had their pitch side reporter in the studio. They had Hope Solo, Gary Bailey, and George Metellus. And it was a very kind of understated commentary, a very understated studio performance, understated game itself. The big question is where was Ray Hudson? Well, Ray Hudson was in Spain as part of the La Liga experience, where La Liga has guests from around the world. I think they enter competitions and they get to go to Spain to experience La Liga. And Ray was this past weekend at the Valencia-Real Madrid game. Just it seems very unusual, though, for Ray not to be calling this one. I thought he would be a pitch-side commentator. He wasn't for this one. I don't know if this is Ray's decision on this one or if La Liga came in and offered a huge amount of money to have Ray do this La Liga experience. But it was not the same. But the game itself wasn't the same either. Kartik, anything else that stood out for you from this past weekend?
No, I mean, I guess the very frustrating Leipzig-Dortmund match, top of the table clash in Germany, and just an awful match, in my opinion. I mean, again, very entertaining, lots of goals, lots of defensive errors, but a very bad advertisement for the Bundesliga. I think quite embarrassing, actually, how all three Dortmund goals were all three goals Dortmund conceded were the type of things that you would expect to see at the rec level, rec level here in the United States, you know, not at top of the Bundesliga. And this is a weekly occurrence with Dortmund. They don't necessarily ship three goals like that, but one or two a week that are just unforgivable. That was disappointing, and also equally disappointing was that the match was on FS2, so that was sad. I think there's been it's been an interesting week to listen to shows and watch the news because of the Arsenal and Everton vacancies. Mm-hmm. So listen to podcasts. So and watch ESPN FC. And the one thing I wanted to note about ESPN FC is there has been increasing Bundesliga coverage on ESPN FC, the daily show, during the course of this season, which I think we know what that's leading into next season. They seem like they're covering it a lot more than Fox, who are the current rights holders, are.
Yeah, and in many ways too, with the Bundesliga, with Lewandowski, to me right now the best striker in the world, and in terms of just the top end of the table, I mean, topsy turvy, lots of teams with chances to win the title. I mean, Bayern still quite a ways back there. So so even if ESPN didn't acquire the rights, I would hope that they would focus a little bit more of their attention. But like you said, Kartik, I mean, we know why they're doing it. That's great. That's great news. Hopefully it'll get people all pumped up for next August when ESPN Plus does launch with the Bundesliga rights. In terms of the FanFest, this one, again, this is the first one I've gone to in person for the Premier League. And the experience of watching this on television versus being there is completely different. Now, watching it on television, yes, it can be corny, cheese ball, kind of silly at times. Other times it can be, not exhilarating, but it can be almost like a reaffirmation or a confirmation of, you mean, if you're a fan of a Premier League club, look at all these thousands of other fans that are very similar to UI. It almost feels like a little bit kind of a connection, a bonding. It feels like, okay, you're watching television going, okay, great, there's tons of other people too that support my club or get as passionate as I do about my club, whichever it may be. in person, I much more enjoyed it in terms of being able to walk around, have conversations with people at random, Sheffield United supporters, Liverpool, Bournemouth, you name it. And I was pleasantly shocked at the level of knowledge from just random soccer fans I talked to and how much they know, not just about the top teams, but even about the Bournemouths and Sheffield Uniteds and Watfords of the world. The players, the background, the stories, which ones were injured. And that I was pleasantly surprised with. And overall, I thought it was a great experience. I mean, it was being able to... It felt like I was with my people in terms of here's people, like-minded people with similar interests to me from all different walks of life. You had families there. You had, elderly there. You name it. That was, a ton of different things happening at this. According to NBC Sports, which I'm still writing the story kind of as a follow-up, but the official attendance was almost 10,000 people. For different games throughout the weekend, it was more packed than for other games, but it was a beautiful weekend, blue skies. As a spectacle on television, I'm getting a little bit kind of tired of it, but in person, it was great. And the next one now, I think Philadelphia, it's going to be, I think, in March, the spring, NBC is going to take it on the road to go there. Now, Kartik, I know you posted something on Twitter, I think it was on Saturday, actually, and I kind of saw the tweet on your personal account, and it took off because there was a lot of people that agreed or disagreed with you. What was the tweet, or kind of the gist of the tweet, and what was your opinion about it?
Which tweet? I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it was just in terms of just, I think Rebecca Lowe saying, okay,
the Premier League is the best
league in the world.
Yeah, Rebecca Lowe passed. So this is, I think people misunderstood what I was saying. Although a lot of people understood what I was saying. I was not saying MLS, that you can say MLS is the best league in the world and that people say that. No, what I was saying was, I was comparing, if Rob Stone is hosting a Fox pregame show and he says, MLS has really closed the gap on Liga MX, and MLS is right there now with the Mexican League. You and I will on this show rightly attack it, because we'll say that's him editorializing an opinion based on the fact that they're trying to promote Major League Soccer, an opinion which empirically cannot be backed up. MLS teams have not been there's no difference now in competitively, the top MLS teams versus the top Mexican teams until maybe this Atlanta victory in the one-off match a couple months ago. But prior to that, since 2000, I mean, the only time an MLS team has beaten a Mexican team in a CONCACAF final was in 1998. So if anything, MLS, the gap is... They were, if you look at it that way, they were equal with Mexico then, and they're not now. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Lowe said a couple of times during this fan fest, the Premier League is the best league in the world. She didn't say it's the most popular league in the world. It's the most entertaining league in the world. That's also an opinion. But the most popular league in the world, it is. I think that's editorializing when you're presenting.
Yeah,
and I don't like that, but as a rule, as a general rule.
And I think it's one of those things. It's like, what does she value best as? I mean, is best the most entertaining? Is best the combination of entertainment plus, I don't know, how
quality, I guess.
Quality or how competitive it is? Or is best, you mean, kind of from team 1 through team 20 in terms of, the relegation dogfights and the fight for the top 4, whatever it may be.
Miami was also an odd place to say it, because I think most people in this community think La Liga is the best league in the world. And if you give a counter argument, and I've been in this position before where I've said, hey, this year the Premier League is better than La Liga. No, it's not. And you'll get shot down. So it was an odd place to do it also. Not that that has anything to do with the comment, but that was also just kind of strange, because maybe it's also being so surrounded by people who proselytize about La Liga. And obviously you talked about BN a few minutes ago, and they're the rights holder for La Liga, and they're based in Miami. So the journalists connected to them are always talking about La Liga. So it may also be the atmosphere I'm in.
But in many ways, I mean, like South Florida, yeah, yes, definitely Barcelona and Real Madrid are the two biggest clubs in South Florida. Beyond that, in terms of La Liga, you mean Atleti, definitely. But where does Atleti, I mean, what does that compare to? Is it the same number of fans in South Florida or, you mean, any major metropolitan city as, say, I don't know, Tottenham Hotspur or... But that was the interesting thing, though, to being at this fan fest and seeing the amount of fans that turned out for different teams. So, for example, and I wrote about this at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into more detail, but there were very few, relatively speaking, in comparison to the other clubs, very few Man City fans. There were a lot of Arsenal fans that were pretty dejected after about 10 minutes in this one. Out of all the fans that attended over the weekend, number one was Liverpool in terms of
turnout. Oh, in South Florida. South Florida. Yeah, that's not surprising. If there's any team that's comparable in terms of support to Real Madrid and Barcelona, it's Liverpool. Now, I think throughout most of the United States, the most popular football club is Club America in most major metropolitan areas. Chivas may be second, and then Liverpool or Manchester United. Here in South Florida, it's very different. It's Real Madrid, Barcelona, Liverpool. Those are the top three. No Mexican club in there. So that's not surprising at all that there were tons of Liverpool fans.
Yeah. And I mean, lots of Chelsea fans, lots of Man United fans, Spurs fans too. But Man City was one, again, the one that I kind of looked at and I thought, okay, this is a club that, you mean, has won the title, has done somewhat well in Europe, but still hasn't.
Not really.
Yeah, I was trying to be kind. But even if Man City, if they won the Champions League, I don't think there'd be a huge amount of fans turning out for them. I just don't know what. I don't know if it's the history or what's not making the connection there with Man City. They've come out here every year.
And Man City supporters are myopic. I mean, I've been piled on again this week because once you beat Arsenal, right, now all of a sudden you're great again. And people are saying, how could you say Pep would leave before the end of the season? You're the only one saying that, which wasn't true. I mean, I think the Guardian pod crew basically agreed he'd be done by the end of the season if they started poorly, which they did, and et cetera, knowing Pep's history. But they do not seem to, and they keep coming back at me, this history. This is the most historical run in the history of any team in English football, the points haul over the last two seasons. Okay, that's fair. But, and I know what's on NBC is on NBC, right? That's the Premier League. And this is an NBC Premier League fan fest. But each of those two seasons, Manchester City was eliminated in Europe by another team from England. So in reality, in the biggest competition in the world, they weren't even the best team in England either season. So that to think that Manchester City would have a comparable fan base to Chelsea, Liverpool, yeah, Manchester United, Arsenal, those four clubs is probably very naive and very I just don't think it's possible until City does something in Europe and doesn't get beat by Spurs and doesn't get beat by Monaco in Europe. Remember, that was a few years ago.
Right. I wouldn't say comparable, but I would say that there should be more fans than there are. I just don't know what the disconnect is with Man City. Yes, even if they win the Champions League, miracles, they beat Real Madrid and go far in the tournament and win it, I'm still not convinced that there'd be tons of Man City fans. And I'm not sure what the disconnect is. I mean, they've tried harder than any other club in the United States from the Premier League in the last 5 years. They've been here every single summer, I believe. Oftentimes, even twice, like at the end of the season, and they'll come back for tours for the ICC. They've gone all out to try to capture this market. And yes, they have succeeded in bringing some fans in. And yes, they have probably the best social media, probably the best website out of all the Premier League teams. But it's just not happening. It's going back to the Bayern Munich against Man City game. Was it last year? The attendance for that, or the year before in Miami, was pretty low. Yep. In comparison to other clubs, and I guess and that's probably the biggest difference too, is in comparison to other clubs, the Arsenals, Liverpools, and Man United have had a 10-year or 15-year head start. Chelsea also too on Man City. But Kartik, that's I'll say one more thing about the NBC Fan Fest before we head on to the TV news and streaming section. And that is that, I would encourage anyone who hasn't been to one of these fan fests, if one is coming to your area, or even if it's not, is go to it. It's actually a lot of fun. I mean, it's the bar opens at 7 o'clock in the morning. And not that it's all about drinking, but it is a very fun atmosphere. And it's also very unusual and great to see, because you have all these fans mixing together. Man United, Man City, Liverpool, Everton, you name it. And everyone gets along really well together. I mean, it's kind of a unusual thing that probably, US and maybe Asia, probably two places where it could happen. But, anywhere else, it probably would create riots and fights and all sorts of things. I enjoyed it. Had a good time. I would encourage others to check it out. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the news and TV streaming news section.
Yeah, TNT's coverage of the UEFA Champions League group stage averaged 222,000 viewers per match, which is the best in more than a decade on English-language television, and was 16% better than last year, and last year was substantially better than Fox had been the previous season. Following a record-setting first year, TNT's overall second season of UCL coverage has continued to deliver strong results, with viewership 14% greater, including the playoffs playing into the group stage compared to 2018.
Yeah, two factors here. I mean, so as you mentioned, Kartik, it's averaging 220,000 viewers for the group stage on TNT. I guess the two factors are, one is that there are fewer games shown on English language television than in the past when Fox Soccer had the rights. And the other thing, though, too, is that I'm sure the FS2 numbers are brought down Fox Sports' average viewership on English language television. And TNT is in, I don't know, off the top of my head, I think, 85 to 90 million homes.
It's in more homes than any Fox network is.
Yeah, so it definitely...
Except for Fox over the year, obviously.
Yeah, so there's definitely some things here that kind of skew it in favor of TNT. But still, I mean, the numbers are positive. They're better than what they were before. And actually, even compared to last year's TNT's number, it's actually up 14%. Now, while I was in Miami, did some talking to different sources and in the business and just trying to find out what's going on in terms of latest news from around the world of soccer TV rights. And I found a few things that were interesting. So the first thing is that CBS have had talks to try to acquire some more soccer rights, even to the extent of making inquiries about taking rights that are sublicensed to them. Now, nothing has happened yet, although, again, there have been discussions. CBS is going around actively trying to see if they can acquire more soccer rights to add to their Champions League stable, which begins, 2021. And, again, a lot of this is going to be, I believe, CBS All Access for their streaming product, and adding more and more sports to that to encourage soccer fans especially to sign up to that service to have access to these games. No deals have been done in terms of these other rights, but that's one to keep an eye on. And they are active, so something could happen there. Copa America, so we know that Euro 2020 is going to be in across Europe this coming summer, with ESPN and Univision having the rights to the tournament. Copa America is also going to be this summer too. And as of the recording of this podcast, the deal has not been signed. There's still negotiations going on. What I'm hearing is that the amount of money that CONMEBOL is asking for the rights to this competition are pretty sky high. So I think a little bit we're in the stage of negotiating. We're in the stage of a couple of different rights broadcasters that are interested, and kind of the back and forth to try to get to that final number and decide who's actually going to acquire the rights. The sooner that these are acquired, the better it is, so that whoever does acquire them can start planning the programming, talent, etc. For the summer. It'll be here before you know it. Now, if you watched El Clasico, one of the things you'll notice is that throughout the game, there was really heavy amount of in-house promos for beIN Sports Extra, which is their free, no strings attached, free streaming service that's available on Roku. From what I understand, there's going to be some more platforms it's going to be added to soon, which is going to include Pluto TV, which is a free streaming service. So keep an eye out for that one. We'll have more information at worldsoccertalk.com once we get all the details confirmed on that. And last but not least, Kartik, I mean, this does raise an interesting question with beIN Sports Extra, is especially with beIN Sports pushing this heavy, big time. They could have had the opportunity to say, hey, contact DirecTV, contact Comcast, call them and demand that you get La Liga and Liga and etc. But they're pushing an in-house, they're pushing their own streaming service. What's your take on this, and what do you think this may imply?
I think we were speculating on this privately the other day. I think that they're going direct to consumer. That's the only way they can do it now in this world of domination of Comcast, who they've had run-ins with, AT&T, who they've had run-ins in with, and Disney, who are also going to direct to consumer, quite frankly, with Disney Plus and the bundle, which I'm finding to be a great bargain for my family. That's not a plug, but that's just my analysis.
Sure.
But I think this is direct to consumer. That is the only way they can get around their problems with the cable system. So this to me is very telling, and that they spent so much time on El Clasico during El Clasico plugging it shows me this is the direction they're going in this country.
Yeah, and for beIN Sports, I mean, this is something that they're in control of. So they can launch this beIN Sports Extra on different platforms. I mean, it's already on Roku. It'll be on Pluto TV soon. It'll probably be on some other devices and other streaming platforms soon. And it's something that they're in complete control of in terms of pushing out the content, having maybe some in-house, some maybe original programming added to it. What it doesn't include is Real Madrid games, Barcelona games, and Atleti games. Those games featuring those three clubs contractually are only allowed to be shown on television. So which is the reason why you won't see those games on beIN Sports Extra. But you will see lots of Ligue 1 games. You will see a lot of probably La Liga games that are, the secondary teams, the smaller teams, which is, there's still good quality there too. But like you said, Kartik, I think it's one of those things that they're seeing a lot of advantages to having this. And it's a way to really promote their coverage. I mean, it's a way that's free. There's no registration required. You just boot up the app and just watch it. And I'm sure they're hoping that people will get pulled in and say, if I want to watch more of this, or I want to watch Barcelona games, whatever it may be, let me contact my cable company, or let me go ahead and contact my streaming company, if it's Sling TV or whoever it may be. All right, Kartik, two more items before we move on to TV ratings. This one might be interesting to get your take on this one.
Yeah, MLS announces Team 30, which is Charlotte. Garber says they're stopping or taking a pause for now, which maybe they are.
Yeah, come on.
The quality level of the league has been diluted through expansion. I think many of us agree on that. And not only through expansion, but I would say this year the number of midweek games with the new calendar diluted the level from 2019 was not as good the level as 17 or 18 in the league, and it wasn't just expansion that did that. The big question of the week, though, Chris, that's been out there is, will MLS actually take this time out that Garber's talking about because they want to improve their TV profile and stabilize for a little bit as a TV product? That's there's been a lot of educated speculation on that.
But what would that mean, though, too? Because it seems to be that, and we've discussed this before too, is that most of their focus is on expansion. So, if you look at the MLS HQ, it seems that, 30% of everything that they do is so focused, that the executive's time is so focused on expansion in terms of going to these different cities and meeting with the representatives and that side of things. That's such a huge priority. it does make sense, Kartik, I guess, in many ways, to say let's pause it there at Team 30 and let's go ahead and now focus on some of the other things that we need to improve upon. Whether it's TV deals, whether it's broadcast quality, production values, whether it's even number of television cameras in the typical stadium in MLS, and those types of things. Maybe it's looking at the calendar and looking, okay, can we make some changes to improve the calendar? I mean, even the current the regular season, is things we can do differently to make it more relevant. But I don't see that happening. I mean, Garber said that team number 30, Charlotte, is going to be probably the last one in the modern era. I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean in this decade? I mean, like now we're going to go into the new decade in January, and then, you mean, the engine start back up again? I just don't trust him in terms of what he's saying, but just because he said this, I mean, different variations of this so many times before, where he's just supply and demand. He's just trying to create that demand and limit that supply and see those rights expansion fees go up from $325 million to upwards of maybe $400 million or plus that. I don't know. It does dilute the quality of the league, and it does make national television more difficult for MLS because, you know, if you have 30 teams, it's so diluted. I mean, it's hard to kind of create something in terms of whether it's rivals between different clubs, or it's, I mean, how many times are these teams going to be on television, on national TV? Is it going to be like, I don't know, Colorado Rapids that might be on national television maybe once during the regular season? I mean, I don't know. It creates a lot of issues. And with this league being at 30 teams, and very likely going into 31, 32, and who knows where it's going to stop, it creates more problems than it does solutions, in my opinion. And Kartik, last but not least, in terms of the TV news section, and that is that Twitch, the streaming platform that streams a lot of video games and that type of kind of live content, has been hit with a $2.8 billion piracy suit by a company in Russia that has the rights to the Premier League. And according to this Russian company that has the rights to the Premier League in Russia, there's been 36,000 alleged cases of Twitch violating the rights agreement. And I don't doubt it at all. I mean, a lot of different streaming sites, especially, I mean, Twitch or something like that. If somebody has access to a game and then goes ahead and live streams it onto Twitch to an audience potentially of, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps from around the world. This is something that I think the Premier League has to be very careful about. This is something that, I mean, especially if you're a broadcaster that's paid millions of dollars for the rights to have the Premier League, and then all the users are going to Twitch to watch it for free, that undermines the product, that undermines the company that has the official rights to it, to monetize that. So, this one is definitely an interesting one, but $2.8 billion, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. Next up is TV ratings, and we don't have all of the numbers, but we will do soon, and we'll post those at worldsoccertalk.com. The big one was Arsenal against Man City, and this was on NBCSN and Telemundo on Sunday. Almost 800,000 viewers for this match. And looking at some of these other numbers here, Kartik, the Premier League Live number, which was the NBC Fan Fest. This was on Saturday from 12 to 12:30. At the end of those 10 o'clock to noon games, but before the Southampton West Ham United game, which was, it's of interest, but not a huge match. 311,000 people watching that. So people are definitely watching it for the highlights, but also watching it for the Fan Fest there. Monterrey against Al Sadd in the Club World Cup on Fox Deportes, 293,000 viewers for that one on Saturday, which is a great number. It will be interesting to see what that number is for the Monterrey Liverpool game that we mentioned earlier. Any other numbers there that stood out for you or of interest to you, Kartik?
No, I'm waiting for December 26th because I think the Monterey Club America match being during the holidays, the 26th and 29th, the two lives could do just a number we've never seen on American television. But we'll wait for that.
Well, that's the tough thing though, because like the one that's on Boxing Day, December 26th, is
That's the Fox one. That's on Fox.
Fox Deportes.
Right.
So and
that's I forgot. Monterey's rights, of course, are held by Fox. Yeah. The America leg.
Which
will be on Univision.
Yeah.
So that'll be the one we have to look at.
Exactly, which is the Sunday night game on Univision and TUDN/A. So that one should be a monster number. As long as that first leg is still, still competitive in terms of, not a 6-0 lead, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. Moving on to listener mailbag. First up is Tim Keane. And Tim says, after hearing Kartik going on and on about how good the Bundesliga is compared to the Premier League, I watched Borussia Dortmund against RB Leipzig, the top of the league. While there were lots of goals, the standard of play, especially the defending, if there was any, and the goalkeeping was terrible. I now know why I watch the Premier League. The Premier League definitely has a lot of defensive mistakes too.
Yeah, the Premier League has some horrible defensive errors all the time in that league and giveaways and not really enough good build-up possession play compared to, let's say, Spain. But yeah, I agree with you on this match. I mean, I already talked about it in the show. It was horrible. It was an embarrassment for the Bundesliga, a horrible advertisement for the league. And Borussia Dortmund does this, right? I mean, this is the thing. This is why I want Lucien Favre gone so badly, is I think that they don't even teach defending. They don't teach positioning at Dortmund specifically. We've seen Christian Pulisic improve his positioning sense in 2 months under Frank Lampard, 2 or 3 months under Frank Lampard, that he didn't get in that time under Favre, that things that he didn't pick up on, just positioning without the ball. Another thing I'll say about this game, Tim, is that this is a classic Dortmund thing under Favre, which started the second half of last season when they collapsed, blew an 8-point lead or 9-point lead in the league and finished second. And then this season also, where if they have a lead in a match, they just pass the ball laterally or they pass it back to their defenders. And then there's some sort of error, a bad giveaway. We saw two of them in this match that led directly to Timo Werner goals. So it was just, I'm glad you watched it because it'll tell you exactly why Borussia Dortmund doesn't win anything, why they're a tease, but they never get over the hump. If without making the judgments on the leagues themselves, I'm glad you saw it, because you'll see maybe if you follow me on Twitter why I complain about Dortmund once a week, mm-hmm. at least.
Next up is JP. JP says, thank you, Kartik, for speaking the truth about the Premier League. I often find most matches unwatchable, but can easily be sucked into a mid-table La Liga, Serie A, or Bundesliga match. I didn't think I'd watch NBC's coverage and marketing over the years, even prior to NBC. They've brainwashed the casual soccer fan in this country to believe that Premier League is the end-all and be-all of world soccer. Unfortunately, this is only going to get worse as all other leagues go behind the streaming paywall and out of the consciousness of casual fans. And La Liga is only shown on a channel most people don't even know about unless you're already a die-hard soccer fan. Here's to hoping CBS has success with the Champions League and decides to build and promote CBSSN's weekend coverage around something like Serie A or the Bundesliga, etc. in the future as a counterweight to the Premier League and NBC. And that was two quick things there, too, in terms of the Premier League and NBC. It's really it is a match made in heaven because both of them are marketing machines. Both of them are fantastic at marketing their product. So the partnership between the two of them is amazing in terms of how well they do that. And then the other thing, though, too, is that we spoke about this on the podcast probably in August or September, but we did a whole episode about how the Bundesliga deal with ESPN Plus was the best news for the Premier League, because now that really kind of positions them for the English language speaking audience as, the go-to soccer league throughout most of the season, especially in the mornings or early afternoons. Later in the day, there's MLS games on. But so, yeah, there's definitely some good points there from JP and Kartik. You definitely touched a nerve there among some of our listeners. Next up is Ricky Worthy. And this is in regards to last week's podcast where I think it was Robert, one of our listeners, was talking about MLS and why we should protect these billionaire owners or something along those lines. But Ricky says, MLS fans are so protective of the billionaire owners because the fans, through taxpayer money, are the ones who built the stadiums. Don't you know it's the taxpayer duty to pay for the rich owners' expenses? There's something that could be like, you could have a whole a conversation, probably a whole hour about that on some economy podcast. Robert continues from last week and he says, I missed in my somewhat disjointed comment what really set me off, protecting the MLS billionaires. There is for sure some crony capitalism in Major League Soccer as well as most of the rich here. Have you had time to read David Goldblatt's book? It's a very fine book, he says, The Age of Football.
It just came in. I just got it in the mail today as we recorded, believe it or not, Robert. Yeah. So I am finishing John Nicholson's book, which I'm sure we'll talk about in future episodes. And then I'm going to start reading that one as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've got some reading to catch up on both of those books. Robert continues. He says, if you are concerned about leagues that protect billionaires, look no further than the Premier League. They have millions and millions to spend, and sometimes that makes for fine football. But as we have seen this year, sometimes that money only brings underachieving teams. In the UK, you have Russian oligarchs, which I think means rule of thieves. Also money from despots in the Middle East and probably laundered drug money. Even my favorites, Leicester's money came via cronyism with Thailand's military dictators. In Italy, you have neo-fascists and maybe mob McCash. Germany, due to the way the league is set up with mostly non-corporate ownership, is cleaner, except for Bayer Leverkusen, I guess it means, who got rich via producing poison gases and now owning Monsanto. So be careful when you step into a minefield. Please read The Age of Football soon before you name names. All billionaires got to where they are, not by being good people, but there are some truly low lives running teams in the Premier League. Thanks for your thought-provoking podcast. Now, Kartik, I know that you got some things to say about this one.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Bayer buying Monsanto has ended up being an incredible public relations disaster for them, and that continues to unfold. I've got a reading recommendation for you, although maybe we'll. I'll give it now. Can We Have Our Football Back? John Nicholson, who has written many, many books about football and other topics, and used to write for this site, used to contribute to the site many, many moons ago.
And a podcast.
I would recommend you write that. You read that book. It's available on the Kindle. It's available, which is where I'm reading it currently. It's also available in paperback from Amazon. I think you'll relate to a lot of what a man who grew up on Teesside, Middlesbrough fan, and acclaimed writer and journalist, has to say about the Premier League. Very similar to the thoughts you and I have.
Yeah, and as a spoiler, Kartik, we'll let listeners know that our plan is to have John on this podcast for the New Year's Eve podcast and around about New Year's Eve, talking about this very topic and talking about. A lot of it's based on television in terms of the way that again, you've read the book, but a lot of it in terms of how TVs and the TV companies are changing the experience of watching football in the UK, where the average football supporter is not the priority. The priority is the TV companies and the worldwide media. So we're going to get into that on that podcast. Listeners who are interested, definitely check out his book. And it's on Amazon and other places to maybe do some pre-reading. But what's the name of it again, Kartik?
Can We Have Our Football Back?
Please. Okay.
Please. Yeah.
And then Robert continues, well, you two are not the only ones fired up. Saying the MLS is funded by a kind of charity via league fees, why are the billions that fall from the sky in England not a charity? The way that money is distributed, that the top teams get the most money and the bottom get less, guarantees that top teams stay on top. If this was reversed, then promotion relegation would be fair in England. Is the Premier League the best or just the richest? The fan fest of Premier League imperialism? Why Austin and now Miami, where new teams are forming? Is Nashville next? To not be totally disagreeable, the season length is a problem. There are many areas that need addressing in the new player agreement. The weather makes it hard to add games. This is talking about Major League Soccer at the beginning or end of the season. What Christopher said about preseason friendlies in warmer areas would be great. My big beef with MLS teams is that they do not play their best players during the main season friendlies. If they did, it may prove to Christopher that they can do well against games with other leagues.
I actually wondered about the choice of Austin and Miami as places for FanFest, considering they're getting new MLS teams. It may have been a coincidence. They're both very international cities. Austin has the only Formula One race in the U.S., and Miami is going to get the second Formula One race in the U.S. So there are ties to British sport, if you look at it that way. I do believe the Premier League promotion of it has a certain degree of imperialism. And again, maybe I'm the wrong person to speak to because I am South Asian. I have of Indian descent and have maybe a chip on my shoulder about British imperialism and Anglicization of culture around the world. Although I embrace it, right? I embrace the Beatles. I embrace James Bond movies. I'm very Anglicized in my own culture. But I do think after the loss of empire, there has been a certain missionary task undertaken by some British imperialists to push the Premier League in every corner, anywhere where the English is spoken, which is why when people came back at me about the FanFest and said, hey, it's because of U.S. soccer, MLS is strong, the Premier League is so popular here. Any country where English is widely spoken outside the United States, outside of the continent of Europe, you'll find the domestic league having some struggles because the Premier League is so popular. So it's not just in the U.S. Australia, you talk to the journalists in Australia, they say the same things we say about it here. And then you could pick any number of countries. But
yeah, Malaysia, right.
Singapore, Malaysia, absolutely. India, even to a certain extent in China, because the educated class knows English, etc. And any African countries. Jonathan Wilson, this past week on the Guardian podcast, pointed out the attendances in Ghana and how they've gone way down in the 20 years that the Premier League has been accessible on television there. So it's everywhere where English is spoken, basically.
Yeah, I had no idea this podcast would be so political, Kartik. I guess this is the time of the season in terms of both in the UK and the US. Next up is John Average Geek. John says...
Or I've just been listening to the Guardian Football Weekly pod too much, because Max Rushton, who's the host, every week there's a political discussion. And when you have the likes of Glenn Denning and Wilson on there, it gets political. And they all have the same political persuasion, by the way. You know, it's not like there's give and take, but they're taking shots at other aspects of the media or other thought processes. Continue.
It's all right. John Average Geek says, I don't like the protection Major League Soccer gets from U.S. soccer in relation to some. Without promotion relegation, every league in the United States should be Division One. I like Germany, but find its ownership rules limited. But English and U.S. ownership rules are not perfect either. Also, for the MLS calendar, an idea, start the season in late July, same time as the UEFA Champions League playoffs start. Go to mid-December, then start in mid-February after the NFL Super Bowl in domes, and then south, play until late May. MLS Cup should be around Memorial Day.
Yeah, I like that.
Next up is Raymond DeRosco. Raymond says, can you tell the executives at CBS that they should hire Bobby McMahon? Well, knowing that a bunch of the CBS executives listen to this podcast, Raymond, you just did. JP goes on to say, he's back again with another comment. You guys briefly mentioned politics. Well, now that it's known that Boris Johnson and the Brexit mandate has won once again, what impact, if any, do you think it will have on the Premier League if they are restricted in bringing in foreign talent, or if it becomes more cumbersome, which European league stands to gain the most from Premier League's loss?
Okay, so a couple of things here. There was some hysteria after Johnson won on Thursday night last week that he would finish Thatcher's job, as many said. Thatcher tried to kill football. Football came back with the Premier League, right? It was still the dying days of the old First Division, and now Boris Johnson will put a fork in or put a knife through football, and that'll be it. Well, no, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay, and I don't think Boris is quite now. You got away from the Thatcherite Conservative Party. John Major was a football fan. David Cameron, obviously, very prominent Aston Villa fan. Boris Johnson is probably not much for football, but I don't think he's going to go after it the way Thatcher did. Maybe I'm wrong. I know some people who hear me on this podcast who believe the opposite and have been telling me that this is it for football will be unhappy with those comments. Now, on the foreign talent thing, this is much more serious and pertinent. My understanding from the people I talked to is that there will be a push by the Home Office to bump the minimum number of players who have been trained in England or Wales before the age of 18 on Premier League rosters from 8 to 12. And as a trade-off, if the Premier League accepts that, they will be allowed to continue to sign players from the European Union without a work permit, even in a hard Brexit scenario, in the scenario of Boris Johnson's Brexit deal. Now, the Premier League does not accept that. There may be some restrictions put on. They may be able to stay with the eight, but then work permits would be required for European for European nationals. Now, this would be catastrophic for mid-table and lower mid-table lower table teams in the Premier League, and I think the top of the Championship, because what you see is those teams, and you know this as a Swansea City fan, Chris, really have to go out and sign a lot of good European players, Dutch, Belgian, French players who are not regularly capped by their national teams but are outstanding professional footballers. Mm-hmm. Now, for the Man Cities and Man Uniteds and Arsenals of the world and Chelseas of the world, they will be able to sign players from the any player they sign from the European Union is probably a player that's being capped regularly for their national team and would get a work permit anyway, right, based on the 75% requirement that you play in 75% of your competitive of your nation's competitive matches over the course of the last two seasons when you apply for that work permit or the club applies for that work permit from the Home Office. So watch this space. You've asked an outstanding question, JP. We will probably be talking about this a lot. My understanding, again, is that there will be a push to move the number from 8 to 12, but then the trade-off would be the Premier League clubs would be and the Championship clubs would be able to continue to sign players for European nationality, European passports without a work permit. But it yep. could go another way, and that could really hurt English football. Or the club side of English football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good info there, Kartik. And there's a benefit of politics and soccer having knowledge of both of them coming together to answer a tough question. Michael Cowlin has the last comment for this podcast, and he says, "One aspect I love about watching soccer is exposure to leagues and players outside of the major European leagues. For example, I really enjoyed watching this past season's Copa Libertadores and the Copa Sudamericana on beIN Sports and seeing the top club teams from South America. Now I am enjoying the FIFA World Cup, Club World Cup, and seeing, however briefly, the winners of the other Confederation Champions Leagues. Watching Flamengo play this week led me to wonder about streaming the Brazilian League in the US. I remember some time ago a report that a streaming service called FanFoot acquired the global rights, but I cannot find out any other information. Do you have any updates on this? It seems like it would be an important and attractive property to promote. Thank you for your continued work in covering and explaining the various ways to access streaming soccer content online. It has been invaluable to me as my love for soccer has grown in the past few years." Kartik, no yawning, please.
Sorry.
It's okay. We're almost done, listeners. But great question, Michael. FanFoot went bankrupt before they were able to actually stream any of the Brazilian League, which is really embarrassing. Left the Brazilian League in a tough spot. What ended up happening was that I believe it's Premier FC, so PFC has access to some of the games, and those games are available on Sling Brazil. So if you Google Sling Brazil, we've got a comparison actually on worldsoccertalk.com, a comparison of all the different Sling TVs available. Sling Brazil is one of those, and it does offer that channel, which does offer some of those games, but not all of them. And that's your best bet. So before Kartik falls asleep, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And listeners, I want to wish you happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Christmas, no matter where you are in this world. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So we're going to skip next week, have some time to rest and enjoy the time with our families, and, of course, watch a ton of soccer. If you do have any questions, though, seriously, let us know. We'd love to answer those out on air. We really do appreciate everything you've done for us in 2019, making this a very fun and enjoyable podcast for us to do this, to get you the information to you about watching the beautiful game. And Kartik, before we go, any last words for the listeners?
Yeah, thank you for joining us all year long. Thank you for making us part of your football experience. And any feedback you have, give it to us. And we hope that we can continue to be on the cutting edge of all this media news as this media space evolves and changes, constantly changing. And when we started this, when we changed the format of this show nearly 3 years ago now, I never expected that we would be not only still on the cutting edge, but that we would have seen so many changes in the media landscape, soccer media landscape, Turner, CBS, some of the issues would be in, etc. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you early next year.
Yeah. Actually, I think when we started the podcast, we wondered whether or not we'd have enough to talk about every week. And it's it's been the opposite. We've always got so much to talk about that it's sometimes difficult to squeeze everything in. So again, listeners, thank you so much. And we look forward to coming to you back after the Christmas holiday break. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of football from around the world, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.